It is my honor to introduce to you someone who truly knows what it takes and what the stakes are like in November. Our Vice President, Joe Biden.
Thank you all so very much. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Mom, as they say in southern Delaware, where they talk kind of funny like y'all do down here, you done good with this kid. Mom, the really reason I came was I was told I was going to get to meet you. And you don't have to answer now, but I want to ask you a question. Have you ever, in your wonderful life, ever seen a less qualified candidate than Donald Trump? In your whole life? My name is Joe Biden. I work for a guy who's a part-time former state treasurer down here. I work for Bill Nelson. And Bill said, I'm the real deal. What that means is no one ever doubts I mean what I say, but sometimes I say all that I mean. And I ain't changing now. Folks, look. Look, you got an incredible opportunity here. As usual, Florida holds the key. No, no, no. I'm not being — it's not hyperbole. We win Florida. Hillary wins Florida. There is absolutely zero path, zero path for this man to make it to the White House. Folks, last week I was on the Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon, and he asked me — yes, I was on there, too. I didn't see that. But Jimmy asked me, and it was serious, he said, have I ever seen a presidential debate focus so much on fact-checking? And my answer was, and I meant it, it was spontaneous, I said, I've never seen a candidate who knows so few facts. Now, look, I'm going to say a few things that I'm not looking for applause lines, but I really believe this to be true. Donald Trump is dangerously uninformed. No, no, hear me out for a second. His unabashed admiration for Vladimir Putin, one of the most disruptive and dangerous leaders in the world today, his lack of awareness that Russia has already invaded Ukraine, occupying Crimea. To his credit, he finally realized, not a joke, that Crimea is part of Ukraine. Think about that. No, think about what that says. I traveled the world for the president. I've traveled well over a million miles just since being vice president. I got picked in part because I allegedly know something about foreign policy. I know every major world leader for the past 37 years. I've known them personally. I have never, I mean this sincerely, never in my career seen as many foreign leaders with such anxiety about the possibility that Donald Trump could be elected president. I was in Australia with the Prime Minister talking about China and our rebalance policy toward the Pacific. And I got a call from a friend who happens to be the Prime Minister of Latvia. Would I get on the plane and travel to the Baltic States to meet with the three leaders of Latvia, Lithuania, and Estonia to assure them — this is not a joke — to assure them that Donald Trump does not speak not only for the nation, does not speak for Republicans, because when he said that he wasn't sure he'd keep the sacred commitment the United States made in NATO if Russia invaded, unless they had paid 2% of their GDP When he said that, he literally shook all of Eastern Europe. He's not even close to the president yet, and he's doing enormous damage to our reputation. His cavalier talk about a nuclear arms race in Asia, his playing into the hands of Hezbollah and ISIL. But if being the most uninformed candidate in presidential history is not enough to disqualify him, his lack, what bothers me, and I apologize for my passion, but it bothers me, his lack of any sensibilities to what the American spirit is, the way he comports himself, the words he utters, and I mean this seriously, are truly beneath the office of the presidency. Says, I don't pay federal taxes, possibly for 18 years or more. And then he says, that makes me smart. What does that say about my father who busted his neck 70 hours a week, making sure that we had food on the table, making sure the neighborhood was safe, making sure that he was doing his part? I'm not joking. Think about it. Think about the janitor who cleans this place up. Think about him paying his taxes. All of you. How does this guy think we support our troops, keep our communities safe, rebuild our roads? Maybe that's why he calls for cutting all those things. And then, when he was accused of rooting for the housing crisis that ruined the lives of hundreds of thousands of Floridians and millions of Americans, what was that equity in your home? That was your peace of mind. That was the thing that allowed you to go to sleep knowing that if your kid got into college and you didn't have the tuition, you might be able to borrow against the house to send them, like my dad did for me. That's like lying there awake at night wondering, God Almighty, what happens? What happens if she gets breast cancer or I have a heart attack? What are we going to do? Well, I have the equity in my home. Or, God willing, my kids will never have to take care of me or my wife or my husband because I have equity in my home. It's called peace of mind. Millions of people were robbed of it, never having missed a mortgage payment in their life. But, ladies and gentlemen, what does he say to that when confronted with it? He looks at Hillary and he said, that's good business. Now, look, all kidding aside, can you picture any former president ever saying that? Can you picture — no, really, can you picture Ronald Reagan saying that? Can you picture George H.W. Bush or George W. Bush or any one of them? Look, he stiffs, as was asserted, hundreds of small businessmen and women who worked on his projects. And what's his response? Quote, maybe I didn't like the quality of their work. Knowing he had the power to steal their wages, knowing that they had little recourse. It matters whether a president reflects the ethical notions of a nation. It matters that he or she has basic sensibilities. Earlier today, I said to a group of veterans, when you talk about, he said to a group of veterans, and I'm quoting, I didn't see this, but I was told this by Chris Cuomo, who interviewed me when I, the last stop. He said, and I quote, when you talk about mental health problems, when people come back from war and combat, they see things that maybe a lot of folks in this room have seen many times over. And then he points out to the veterans in the room and says, and you're strong. You can handle it. But a lot of people can't handle it. Where in the hell is he from? No. This is deadly earnest.
My son spent a year in Iraq, came back a highly decorated veteran, Bronze Star, and a lot else. I've been in and out of Iraq and Afghanistan over 29 times. I found myself in Iraq being asked by General Ordiano, a four-star, to pin a silver medal on a young captain who had pulled someone out of a burning Humvee, risking his life. And when I went to pin it on him in front of the entire brigade, he stood at me, looked at me, said, "Sir, I don't want the medal. I don't want the medal." You know why? He said, "He died. He died, Mr. Vice President. I don't want the medal." How many nights does that kid go to sleep? Seeing that image in his head, dealing with it. I have a card I carry with me, my schedule. Every single day I have my staff contact the Defense Department early in the morning. There's a black box in the bottom of it. And it lists U.S. daily troop update. U.S. troops died in Afghanistan and Iraq. 6,753. Not plus 6,000. Not 6,700. 6,753. Because every one of those warriors left behind an entire family, a community for us. Every one of them. 52,419 wounded. But as the veteran can tell you, over 200,000 coming home with unseen wounds. Funny suicides a month. I don't think he was trying to be mean. He is just so thoroughly, completely uninformed. We only have one. I've been saying this, and when I said it 15 years ago, I got criticized for it. But I make no apologies. We only have one. We have a lot of obligations. We only have one sacred obligation: to care for those we send to war and to care for them and their families when they come home. We have obligations to the elderly and the poor and everyone. That's the only sacred, sacred obligation we have. The average life expectancy of those wounded in Vietnam, 70% of those wounded in Afghanistan or Iraq, had they been wounded in Vietnam, would have died. But because of the golden hour, they're alive. But their life expectancy is 35 years. They're going to need extended medical help the rest of their lives. What are the chances this guy will honor that commitment? I'm serious about this. I'm serious about it. It's not that he just doesn't get it. He has no interest in finding out. What type of leader, what type of woman or man who wants to be president would get up at 3 o'clock in the morning and tweet, and I quote, "Hillary, quote, helped disgusting Alicia M. become a U.S. citizen so she could use her in a debate." Disgust. I mean, all kidding aside, I mean, think what that says about us as a nation around the world. That the leader of one of the two major political parties, 3:30 in the morning, and this guy wants to be president of the United States of America?
No way.
Let me tell you something, man. There's got to be more than no way. E.J. Dion in the Washington Post today said this, and I quote, "The answer is," referring to the 3:30 tweets, and then again a 5 and whatever the other times were. He said, "The answer is that this episode should finally force everyone to say enough. Trump," he went on to say, "is neither normal nor stable." No, these aren't my words. This is one of the leading columnists in the nation. He said he is manifestly dangerous to the country, erratic, and everything except his unrestrained meanness. And by the way, his policy proposals are equally as erratic and ill-suited for a country that is on the verge of the most exceptional renaissance we've had since the end of World War II. While Hillary Clinton's are designed to help lift up the middle class, move the country forward, so that we can and we will own the 21st century. Look, I know I'm referred to all the time as the White House optimist, as if I'm the kid who just fell off, my grandfather would say, fell off the turnip truck yesterday. I've been there longer than all of them. I got elected when I was a 29-year-old kid to the Senate, the second youngest man ever popularly elected. No, I don't say it for that reason. And I was always I wasn't old enough when I got elected. I had to wait to become the eligible age of 30 to be sworn in. And I was referred to as a young idealist. I am more optimistic. My word is abiding. I am more optimistic today than I've been at any time in my career. We've gone from economic crisis to recovery. We're in the cusp of genuine resurgence. Look at the recent data from the Census Bureau. 5.2% growth in household wealth. The fastest one-year growth ever, with typical households' incomes going up $2,800. 3.5 million fewer people in poverty than when we came to office. Poverty rate fell faster than any time since 68. More than 15 million jobs in 78 months. That's more jobs than every other industrial country in the world combined. Unemployment rate down from 10 to 4.9. Foreclosures abated. Look, we got a lot more to do. And Hillary knows what we have to do to seize this immense opportunity. We need a tax code that's fair and rewards productivity, not merely wealth. We need the best trained, as my wife is a community college professor says. Any nation that out-educates us will out-compete us. We need the best educated workforce in the world. And by the way, 6 out of 10 jobs right now in America require something more than a high school degree. And by 2020, it'll be 8 out of 10 jobs. It's gone from physical brawn to cognitive capability. But the same people who shoveled coal into a blast furnace are fully competent and capable intellectually to learn how to use a photovoltaic machine making solar shingles and solar panels. They got to be trained. Just take a look at the candidates. I'm not going to keep them much longer. On taxes, Ruth Marcus said today in the press, Trump in charge of the tax code would be, as always, Trump doing what is best for Trump. Donald Trump never gives the details, but he can't hide the facts from independent, bipartisan experts on taxation. They indicate that his tax plan would cost $5.9 trillion in tax cut, disproportionately benefiting the super wealthy. It would also increase taxes on 8 million low- and middle-income families and 15 million kids. Provide tax — this is not my — these aren't my numbers. These are not progressive Joe Biden. These are independent analyses. Provide taxpayers in the top 1% — and they're good people, by the way. They really are. But they don't need another average $300,000 a year tax cut — another one. And they know they don't need it. Cut programs provide — in order to pay for this, one of two things happens. You either increase the deficit — almost $10 trillion, or — did I say billion? It was trillion before. But here's the deal. In order to provide for that tax cut that disproportionately benefits those who are already in great shape, what would happen? You'd have to cut from the middle class, from education, from training, from Social Security, from Medicare. You'd have to cut every one of those programs by 40%. 40%. Meanwhile, Hillary's laid out a detailed plan. The tax code, everybody pays their fair share, putting working class people in a much better position to get and stay in the middle class. She does it by eliminating loopholes that have no positive impact on growth. There's only one rationale for tax breaks. And it's if it promotes a social good that the country thinks is worth doing, like home ownership, or if it increases productivity, encourages people to take risk to grow the country. Today, there are $1.3 billion per year in loopholes. Find me an economist, anyone in the great universities in Florida, can justify more than $600 billion of those tax cuts. Let me just give you one example. Hillary wants to pay for college so he can come out debt-free. I have the dubious distinction, I'm not proud of it, being listed as the poorest man in the Senate. No, not a joke. When I did my financial disclosure for vice president, the headline in the Washington Post lead article was, quote, as my wife would say, you can Google it, quote, "It's probable no man has ever assumed the office of vice president with fewer assets than Joe Biden." I assume they were talking about financial, not intellectual. I had three kids go to college. I had three kids go to school. I went to a state school. I got three kids that got into very good schools. They all went to graduate school. My number one son, who went to Georgetown, my number two son went to Georgetown and Yale Law School, graduated. I borrowed every penny I could borrow. I was making $48,000 a year, which was a good salary in the late 80s. And my son graduated $128,000 in debt. My number two son, because I could borrow against my house. My number one son went to University of Pennsylvania, Syracuse, graduated $98,000 in debt. They both worked 30 hours a week all through law school. I mean, all through undergraduate school and both through law school. And then my daughter, she went to Tulane University and then University of Pennsylvania to get her graduate degree in social work. She graduated $91,000 in debt. Every penny I could borrow was borrowed. Bo just paid off his loans just before he died. And he was Attorney General of the state of Delaware. Mother, son paid off his loans. He's doing very well. And we're helping my daughter pay off her loans. Ladies and gentlemen, you can make 2 years in free community college, for example, we're proposing. It costs a lot of money, by the way. It would go from 6 million people in community college to 9 million. You can only go to a college that allowed those credits to be transferred to a four-year school, and you have to maintain a B. Cost $6 million. But you know what? If you eliminated one loophole, it's called stepped-up basis. Stepped-up basis means, I hope you know what it is, I didn't. It means that if you bought $1 million worth of stock, it accrues to worth $2 million, you're on your way to sell it. If you sold it, you'd have to pay $1 million in capital gains, less than your tax rate. And you get hit by a car, God forbid, and you die. And you leave it to your daughter. And your daughter sells it the same day. She pays nothing. You know what that cost? And it only affects 0.3% of the American people. They're good people. They're already very wealthy. And they don't need the help. But you know how much that costs the federal government? $17 billion a year. I can pay for every single solitary community college student, cutting their four-year cost in half, increasing productivity by every econometric model by 0.2%, that's over $1 trillion over 10 years, and I can still cut the deficit by $11 billion a year. Look, the point is this. Hillary pays for every single thing she calls for. You know, all we have to do is if we raise the minimum wage, if we provide adequate child care tax deduction to allow women to get back in the workforce, we will raise the GDP by 9%. We are the ones who are talking about productivity, not the Republicans. We are the ones. And we can do all this. Look, I could go on about her plans of the 21st century infrastructure and housing, but look, here's the deal. One thing that was said in the debate Hillary didn't have time to respond to, there was so much incoming. You know, corporations these children in front of me here, and thank you for being here, kids. I know this is boring. But they're going to hear the word insourcing, not outsourcing like we heard. Folks, American companies are coming home. Here's the deal. A.T. Kearney, one of the largest management firms in the world, they do a study every year for the last 19 years. They ask the question of 300 largest industrialists in the world. They ask, where's the best place in the world to invest? By a margin larger than any time they've kept that survey. The last 3 years, they say the United States of America. There's an outfit in Boston called Cambridge Econometric. They do a survey of every single American corporation invested in China. They ask the same question that comes out in February of every year. What are your plans for next year? 54% of them said, I plan on coming home. Now, look, they're coming home. They're coming home for not because of Joe Biden and Barack Obama or Hillary Clinton. They're coming home because we have the most productive workforce in the world. It's three times as productive as Asia. We are the epicenter of energy. Mexico, Canada, and the United States. There's more energy here than all the rest of any other part of the world, including Saudi Arabia. It costs three times as much for gas in Europe, seven times as much in Asia. That's one of the reasons they're coming home. And we'll have it for as far as the eye can see. We are the epicenter of energy. We have the most — Bernie doesn't like me saying this. He's a good friend. But we have the most agile venture capitalist in the world. We do. We do. We also have a system of laws where the courts you can count on, where you can adjudicate your differences, and where intellectual property is protected. For all these reasons and other, that's why we have the greatest research universities in the world, because of the most underestimated president in history, in my view, Dwight D. Eisenhower. When Sputnik went up, he said, let's invest massively. He had, quote, 20 wise men. They wouldn't say it that way today. But 20 wise men. And they made recommendations. One of the recommendations was invest in research and development at the federal level. He said, I will do that, but most of it will go to our colleges. Name me a single new product of the digital age that wasn't invented in the United States of America. Name me one that is worldwide in its scope. Why? Because we have the most innovative people in the world. And by the way, in no small part because of immigration. And ladies and gentlemen, so look, I'm so sick and tired of America being talked down. No, I really am. You know, I remember back when I was a younger senator, in 1988, I think it was, debating at the University of Pennsylvania Wharton School about whether or not Japan was going to own us. And I think the guy was from Heritage Foundation telling me Japan was going to own us. I said, not a shot, and I named the reasons. Ladies and gentlemen, Japan hasn't grown in two decades. Then I heard about how Europe, the EU, 384 million people are going to eat us alive economically. Raise your hand if you think that's a problem. I'm serious. And I want them to do well, because the better they do, the better we do. Yeah. And China. How many times you hear this guy talk about China owning us? Ladies and gentlemen, China, and God love them, I hope they do well economically because they want stability. But here's the deal, guys. They not only don't have enough energy, they don't have enough water. They're planning a $2 trillion effort to turn around the two major rivers and have them flow in a different direction so there's enough water for their populations. They have so much cadmium in their soil, their agricultural belt, that they can't meet their agricultural needs. Come on. China, we used to express in a little steel town I moved to from Scranton, Pennsylvania, called Claymont. These guys aren't an economic patch on our genes. They're not close. No, they really aren't. They're good. We want them to do well. But they're not even in our class. And so here's the deal. We can't afford to miss this enormous opportunity. Everything you worked for, I was here 4 years ago, to get Barack and me reelected. Everything you worked for, not a joke, in a heartbeat, will be wiped out. Not only economically in terms of foreign policy, but in terms of rational social progress, civil rights, civil liberties, the rights for the LGBT community, the rights for people who have serious physical problems, the right — I could go down the list. The arc of the history of this country has always been toward more tolerance, more understanding. If he were to win, I'm not — this is not hyperbole. This all in jeopardy. So, you know, as Bill said, that registration ends October the 11th. Don't wake up. Don't put yourself in a position of waking up on Wednesday morning after the general election, where Florida's lost by and has in the past by 290 votes or 3,400 votes, and say, if I just took my neighbor, she didn't have a car, if I just got her to the polls, and if I just went over and got Dad to come and vote, if I just did that, everything would be different. Ladies and gentlemen, I don't think that's going to happen. But we cannot afford to take this chance. I'll conclude by saying that you should go to iwillvote.com and make sure you are registered. Because there's efforts abroad, as you know, to both literally abroad and domestically. Not a joke. To see to it that Democratic registration, and particularly in other communities, like happened in the first election with us, you found African-American communities waiting 6-7 hours to get to the polls. In Republican areas and Republican states, waltzing through because there are more polling booths, more polling places. So we can't assume anything, guys. And what bothers me most is that this appeal to the fears of the American public, that's based upon a very low opinion of average Americans. I'm convinced these guys don't understand us. They don't understand my father and mother. They don't understand the neighborhoods I came from. Every single person — I grew up in a neighborhood where I was absolutely my parents' belief and convinced me that I could be anything I wanted in the whole world. The Joe Biden, the little kid who stuttered from a neighborhood that, in fact, didn't have a lot of money, raised in a 2,200-square-foot house with four brothers and sisters, me included, one relative always living with us, that I could be president, I could be vice, I could be anything I wanted to be. These guys don't think ordinary people like me in my neighborhood have dreams. I mean, they really don't. Think how they talk about it. They don't think ordinary people can do extraordinary things. There's never, ever, ever been a time in the history of this country we've given Americans just a fighting chance that they've ever, 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 ever let their country down. Never. In America, we never bow. We never bend. We endure. We move forward. We are America, and we are second to none. That is the history of the journey of this country. And God willing, Hillary Clinton will write the next chapter of that history. So go vote. Go vote. God bless you all, and may God protect our troops. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Appreciate it. And I understand you got an overflow crowd of 300 people. If the 300 will wait, I'll come and see. I don't blame you if you don't want to wait, but I'm going to say hello to these folks here. God bless you all. Thanks.